All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. I am co-hostless tonight as Chris decided last second he was going to go see the likes of Kendrick Lamar and Schoolboy Q in Tampa, and the worst part about it is he forgot to invite me, and the tickets were only like $40. So bottom line is Misto Cristofo isn't here, but you can follow him on Twitter, get some of his concert takes at Misto Cristofo. As for myself, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Zach_Goodall and the Locked On Jaguars page at Locked On Jaguars. A lot of great work going out over there with some of our guys like Demetrius and Zach and Rory getting a lot of content cranked out for the people. Be sure to subscribe for the podcast on iTunes, as well as on Spotify, Megaphone.fm, and TuneIn. And we are going to be continuing our crossover series, going outside of the AFC South for the first time, taking a look at the rest of the NFL, how they handled their offseason, and looking forward to the 2018 season. And I am joined by my buddy, Jeff Lloyd, who you can follow on Twitter at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd with two L's. He is the host of Locked On Browns. He's got a great show going on over there. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
Couldn't be better. Like we were talking about before we hit the record button, May's a nice month. You know, you kind of get to lay back a little bit, recharge the batteries a little bit, like Christopher, go out, see a show, do something, get your head back right. And before we know it, July will be here and it'll be camp talk and it'll be, full on, full go.
Exactly. As much as I'm looking forward to football coming back, it is also very, very nice to be able to relax, like you said, just get back. And the first thing on my mind isn't always football now, and that's just a refreshing thing. But we're going to go ahead and hop right into it. We're going to be talking about the Cleveland Browns. They had potentially the most exciting offseason out there, just in terms of pretty much everything Sashi Brown did, whether you're a Sashi Brown believer or not. They kind of did the opposite. They didn't try and acquire picks and hit all the value. They started making all these flashy trades, bringing in different players. They brought in John Dorsey. A lot happened. So we'll go ahead and start looking at it from the Dorsey hiring to retaining Hugh Jackson. Jeff, go ahead and give us a rundown of how that all happened, what you think of the Dorsey hiring, how he's done so far.
I was a believer in Sashi's plan. Whether they would have stayed in this draft and made every pick, or whether they would have manipulated the draft now that they felt that they were in a more comfortable space, roster wise, it would have been interesting to see. But at the end of the day, what's done is done. I think the first thing when John Dorsey took this job, I think he needed the assurance of, am I working to make this football team better? And the guy in the head coaching room, is he along for the ride? And I think he was given those assurances that John Dorsey was able to go ahead and put himself together the best 53-man roster he was capable of doing. And whether or not this head coach could cut, was worth his salt, that would be to be determined. And, maybe John Dorsey is looking for a head coach at the end of the 2018 season. That could be the step two of what he's done for his first year here in Cleveland. But I do, overall, I like what he did. Everybody, wants to just go football guy. I think you're going to use that term when you're getting away from such a analytical regime in the front office that they had. But, John Dorsey's, he's got a solid track record, obviously, with Highsmith and, bringing in Wolf from Green Bay. I think he put together a really, really strong front office. I think everything they did, they put a lot of time and effort to. Nothing was, shorted. Nothing was cited. They did a smart thing in making sure they spent as much time as possible as they could with each one of these quarterbacks that were available for the number one selection. At the end of the day, a Cleveland Brown fan, you can't complain right now. You just can't.
Right. And now we'll go ahead and move it over to recapping some of their actual acquisitions and some of their losses, stuff like that. They approached free agency, seemingly ready to spend. And then the actual most exciting part about when their league year kicked off is the three trades they made: Tyrod Taylor, Jarvis Landry, and Demaryius Randall, all in-house from the Bills, Dolphins, and Green Bay Packers, respectively. Then went on to sign in free agency, as of what I see right now, Chris Hubbard, offensive lineman, running back Carlos Hyde, defensive back Terrence Mitchell, among others. Just give us a rundown on some of these signings, how these guys are going to fill in, how these contracts look, stuff like that, before we move on to the draft.
Well, the first things first, the trades, I think the most necessary thing with the trades were, is you can have all the cap space in the world, but if at the end of the day the product you're trying to sell to some of these guys is a 1-in-31 franchise, you got to realize that some guys just aren't going to answer the phone. I mean, look, these guys want money. They want to win. If they can get the best of both worlds, that's what they're going to shoot for. So I think the trades were to try to make at least, you know, if you want to use the term, pretty the place up. Look, we've got a quarterback now. Yes, we hold pick number one. We might draft one there, but we've got a veteran quarterback. This organization is not going to rush another 21-year-old quarterback. We're not going to do it this way now. So that was the, you know, with the Tyrod Taylor. You know, obviously Randall was somebody that they were comfortable with. You know, obviously, you know, with Highsmith and with Wolf coming from Green Bay, all the talk is he's going to go from cornerback back to his college position at free safety, a team that was a desperate, serious issue for this team last year. They had no faith in anybody to play it. So I think they feel more comfortable putting him in that position. You know, Jarvis Landry, the entire speak we did all offseason was, yes, this wide receiver core could be really, really good, but you need insurance policies. You know, Josh Gordon, obviously, with all his issues, as great as he is when he is available, the biggest issue is he's not available very much. You know, Corey Coleman, there's a guy I still have a lot of hope for. He was my number one wide receiver in the 2016 draft. He's missed, you know, 7-8 games his first 2 years in the league. You needed guys you could rely on. Jarvis Landry, you know, his game I'm not the hugest fan of. I think he gets a little more credit than he deserves. I think he's more of a chain mover, you know, a guy who gets a ton of targets and, you know, you get a let of one a reception for 3 yards, you know, and every now and then he makes a really, really big play. But he knows what he's doing. He knows how to get open. So, you know, that was another nice move because now you look at it, if you do have Corey Coleman, if you do have Josh Gordon, if you do have Jarvis Landry, you know, that's a three-headed wide receiver core that can go against pretty much any roster in the NFL. So all strong moves there. The free agency, all the cornerbacks were signed. These are all movable contracts. If they do not like any of these guys at the end of 2018, they pretty much can walk away from every single one of them. What they did like is that these guys will tackle. These guys will play tough. They will play physical. So that's something they wanted to get to. Last year, there was a lot of guys, you know, 8 and 9 yards off the ball. They didn't want that this year. They want a lot of more physicality. And obviously, you know, went ahead and drafted somebody at 4. But there's going to be a lot of fight between all these guys to see what the rest of this pecking order, this cornerback group, is going to be.
Now, you mentioned about free safety and how they were looking for a guy like that. Before we take it to the draft, with them bringing in Randall and moving him back to free safety, what's going to happen to Jabril Peppers after the one-year experiment with him 25 yards off the ball?
it was nice of Jabril Peppers to actually get to still play, a lot of time in Michigan while he was playing free safety for the Browns, because that's where he was lined up. But you got to, you know, and this is the thing, I mean, it was such a disservice to do it to Jabril Peppers. It's one thing for it to happen at the collegiate level, you know, where he went there as a 5-star cornerback and then Michigan realized that wasn't the best thing for him. And then Michigan realized, let's try him at free safety. And then what did Michigan do is last year? He's not a free safety. Let's get him as close to the line of scrimmage and let him just be an athlete and create havoc and, you know, bust some plays up. And I think that's more of what they're going to do. Maybe you'll even see him maybe play a little nickel and dime linebacker. He needs to be within 7-8 yards of the line of scrimmage. He can cover. He's not as great going backwards as he is going great forward. He can cover east and west. Get him in something that he does well. The greatest disservice you can do to a guy when you put a first-round pick on him is put him in a position, A, where you have the tape you've seen shows he hasn't succeeded, and basically ask him to do it again. And it was handled incorrectly. There's going to be some fighting up closer to the line of scrimmage because that's kind of what Derek Kindred does. So, you know, another move could possibly be made to that secondary. But, you know, you put the guys in the position where they have the best chance of winning and find somebody else to do what you need to do, a guy who has a resume of doing it. So, you know, it's good for Peppers. I think he'll be more comfortable closer to the line of scrimmage. He sees things quickly. He reacts quickly. You know, even if he is a tad bit undersized as a safety, he's not afraid to get his nose dirty. So it should be a lot more promising in year two for Jabril Peppers.
Now we'll bring it back to the secondary as we move into the draft. Before we do that, we want to talk about, and I'm supposed to shout Chris out here because of his love for Baker Mayfield. but we'll talk about the quarterback taking number 1 overall. It was kind of a shock to the world, at least the morning of, when the news started to break that, hey, maybe it isn't Darnold, maybe it really is Mayfield. But before that, the expectation was that it was probably going to be Darnold. How big of a shock was it to you? How do you like the fit? And tell me about what his role is going to be with the whole bridge system ahead of him.
For me personally, if I were drafting, I would have drafted the best throwing talent in this draft in Josh Rosen. I thought they would have taken Sam Darnold, who was the youngest, showed very well, you know, had some footwork issues that needed to be cleaned up. He kind of slid in best to the, you want to know what, we already have a guy in place. We went ahead and signed another backup veteran quarterback to mentor the rookie along. So it seemed like everything pointed to it. Baker Mayfield was totally deserving to be in this discussion. I mean, nobody had a better season playing quarterback at the collegiate level last year than Baker Mayfield. So I would say it was about, you know, once all the big media started to arrive upon Dallas is when you started to get the wow and the, oh, hold up, and this type of things. And you know, when everybody, you know, to a man who I had spoken with, who it's Sam Darnold, you know, in text messages and DMs, yeah, this may not be going the way we were thinking it was going. He was the most NFL ready. If you're going to open an offense up and try to feature everyone, something that Todd Haley can do, it really connects with Baker Mayfield. And the other thing is once Baker Mayfield got into rooms and met with NFL teams, you saw him as the 23-year-old guy, the guy who's been around the game a little bit longer than a Rosen, a little bit longer than a Sam Darnold. And he showed in those meetings, you know, how much more he knew about the game, the X's and the O's, watching tape, getting prepared, that he had as an advantage of being 2 years older than these guys. And, you know, almost every NFL front office that's commented on to a man said they were just taken aback about how prepared he was. Yes, he's a guy who likes to go out. He likes to enjoy his life a little bit. But make no mistake about it, he is 100% ready to go out every day and be the NFL quarterback that any franchise who drafted him, you know, needed him to be.
Now, you mentioned beforehand about how they went out and they made this trade for Tyrod Taylor and they brought in another guy. It seemed like that kind of screamed Sam Darnold, because he was the true, we need to bring you along, and if we bring you along slowly, you can turn into something really special. You call Baker Mayfield potentially the most NFL-ready of this quarterback group. So how do you think that this whole bridge situation with Tyrod Taylor ahead of him is going to work out?
It's going to be interesting because look, I have no doubt that Tyrod Taylor, you know, obviously will be your week one starter. But Baker Mayfield can close this gap and can close it in a really, really quick way. And part of this is, you know, look, you still have your same head coach here. But now, Hugh Jackson, it's not his offense. It is Todd Haley's offense. Everybody is going to be on the same learning curve. So, you know, Baker may not see as many reps right out the gate that, you know, obviously a Tyrod Taylor is going to see, but it doesn't mean he's not going to know the playbook, the equivalent of what Tyrod Taylor will. So it's going to be interesting. Obviously, a lot of it's going to come down to how well Tyrod plays, how the offense looks, how the team on a whole looks. Obviously, you're not going to upset the apple cart if you somehow find a way to go 1-1 or get yourself to 2-2 or 2-3 through the first 4 or 5 weeks. But, you know, you get yourself where it's 1-4, 1-5. People are going to be screaming for the head coach's job. And, you know, if they're screaming for the head coach's job, the reason they're screaming for it is everybody wants to see the rookie quarterback. I like Tyrod Taylor. I have zero issues with him. I think one of the things, and I had one of the Buffalo Bills beat writers come on the show, you know, right after the acquisition was made. And he said the one thing with Tyrod is a lot of times NFL teams tried to get cute and, you know, do everything they could. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor, the athlete, would make a bunch of plays. So, you know, he said he talked to players, you know, who played against him and said, look, when we were able to shut him down is when we finally just said, all right, dude, we're going to play dime defense. You're going to have to beat us by making every throw. And that's where Baker Mayfield's going to have the advantage of Tyrod Taylor, is Baker will pick you apart underneath if he needs to. You know, Tyrod, one of the best advantages he's got is he's a good deep thrower. And that, you know, obviously bodes well with the Josh Gordon, bodes well with a Corey Coleman. But, you know, where you make your money as a quarterback is 3rd and 7. Can you hit the 8-yard slant? Can you stick a square in? And, you know, Baker's going to have that advantage over him. So it's going to see, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how well Tyrod plays, because, you know, Baker's going to be nipping at his heels and, you know, probably pretty quickly.
Now, I'll loop it back to what we were talking about with the secondary, Denzel Ward. Now, keep in mind, Chris and I were at the draft. It was a lot of fun, great time. That was probably what we would both consider to be the shock pick of the night, and I think the stadium kind of agreed. Like, everyone around us just seemed to have no idea what was going on when Denzel Ward was picked number four. Denzel Ward was considered to be a top talent, but, I mean, people thought it was going to be Minka or Bradley Chubb or surprise pick like Quentin Nelson, even something like that. No one even saw Denzel Ward coming. What are your thoughts on the Ward pick itself in terms of him as a prospect and his immediate fit?
I think they liked him so much that it offset everything else. I think they realized that everybody they had signed in the offseason projected to be a cornerback two or three or a four. They already have a nice nickel guy, and obviously in Body Calhoun. We all felt covering it, they needed that top dog to the group. Me personally, you know, I like Jaire Alexander a little better. I do have a little concern about Denzel Ward playing against some of these bigger receivers, and the way the schedule fell this year, he's facing Mike Evans, he's facing Mike Thomas, he's facing Julio Jones. I mean, are you going to use him to shut down number twos and send two guys at these big guys? It'll be interesting how that plays out. But it was a little bit of a shock. I mean, it seemed like, you know, Bradley Chubb would just be the guy. You get yourself a nice set of bookends. Manny Ogbah that you can kick inside in nickel and dime situations. It made for a great, great D line. So it did seem a little bit of a head scratcher. But, you know, I had Daniel Jeremiah on the show, and he said, the only head scratcher of that move for me is that they left the number two player on the board in Bradley Chubb. For Daniel Jeremiah, he had Denzel Ward as his number four overall player, and we're talking about where he went as the number four pick. So, these Ohio State cornerbacks, they've shown pretty well lately. So, you know, obviously these guys are coming NFL ready. So I just think it was a nice, safe move, and I think maybe if you look at John Dorsey, maybe he thinks he's getting a Marcus Peters without the baggage, without the, you know, the headache that he can cause. So he seemed pretty confident in it. It seemed, you know, for me, you know, I'd go pass rusher over cornerback if I ever had the choice. But, you know, Denzel Ward, he's pretty excited to be here. And it's going to be interesting. He's close to the area. He knows, you know, how this organization has suffered. He wants to be a part of, you know, making it better. So it's going to be fun how it all goes down.
Then moving on to day two, we kind of zoom over some of these guys. Just your thoughts on these picks, who stands out the most. Austin Corbett, the versatile offensive lineman that is projecting, it looks to be a tackle out of Nevada in this Cleveland Browns offense. Nick Chubb, running back out of Georgia, after they already had brought in Carlos Hyde, have Duke Johnson in-house, etc. And then Chad Thomas, defensive end out of Miami. Who is your favorite pick of the three, and how do you see these guys panning out?
I think my favorite pick of the three is Nick Chubb. Pete Smith is a guy who's a constant guest on my show, and we battled the entire time, even through the college season, all the way up until the draft night. It was Sony Michel versus Nick Chubb. I was a Sony Michel guy. He was a Nick Chubb guy. But look, at the end of the day, one went 31, the other one went 35. I think Nick Chubb does scream a little bit of football guy, played all 4 years. You know, he was a guy who went through a devastating injury, recovered from it. I think the thing you like most about Nick Chubb is he's going to get you what is drawn up each and every play. And then every now and then he's got a little extra. He's still, you know, not everything was taken away by that knee injury. There's some wiggle, or there's a guy on his waist where he's strong enough that if he can spin, he's going to break that tackle. I think he's a nice compliment to Duke Johnson long-term, whether or not they make that move and give Duke his money. I think that's interesting. Corbett, I think, was brought in with the purpose of, they want to whittle down the offensive line. Look, there's no way you're going to replace Joe Thomas. But they want to whittle down 11 guys to 9 to 7 and then say, you want to know what? Find me the best 5 of this group, and we'll figure out how to line them up. The Chad Thomas one, that was just a little bit of a head-scratcher. I'm not sure whether he's going to play inside or outside. If they think he's going to play outside, I mean, I don't know if they're going to get the return on that they're hoping for. But, all nice selections, you know, all things of need. So, you know, all picks that will probably play out long-term in some way, you know, that are worn enough for where they were selected. But Nick Chubb at 35, and the rumors were starting to come, you know, as we got to, you know, the morning of day two, that Nick Chubb was flying high, flying up, and he was going to go real early. And I just kind of had an inkling that 35 was going to be that spot. He kind of just, you know, gave off the vibe of somebody Dorsey would like, a guy who's just going to show up, do his job, ball out, show up every week, play hard, just fit everything.
Now, I don't know nearly as much about the day three picks for Cleveland, except for one that I actually got to meet down at the Florida Pro Day. And my immediate observation from meeting him and seeing him work is that he didn't really seem to have matured past his issues that he had had in the past at the University of Florida. That is Antonio Callaway. The news came out that apparently Josh Gordon is going to be mentoring him in Cleveland, and I immediately thought, oh, this is such a great idea. But give me your thoughts on Callaway in terms of how A, that whole mentoring thing's going to work out, and as well as, your comfort level with the pick considering his past, because we know from a talent perspective, he could have and should have been an early pick, but his off the field obviously is what dropped him.
Well, here's the thing. Even with Callaway, look, you got the chance to go to the combine, and it was like, all right, look, let's all try to forget, what the kid has off the field. All right, here he is. He's got his shot again. All right, let's see what you got. Go out, show out. Let's get some testing numbers. We haven't seen you play ball in over a year now. And, he showed well, and then you get the news. He failed the piss test at the combine. It's like, I mean, for me, it was just kind of like, all right, done. I'm done here. I'm out. I got to go now. And here was the thing with the Browns, which makes it the head scratcher for me, is we already have two question marks at wide receivers. One's an injury, one is a very similar case. So now you've got three. And this is what did into Deshaun Kizer last year, is every time he turned around and looked to his left and his right, there were different wide receivers out there. There was no cohesiveness. And this very easily, you could conceivably say by week two, Jarvis Landry is your wide receiver one, which puts yourself in a really, really bad spot. There is some flashes of Callaway on tape. The Alabama game where he scored two touchdowns in the SEC championship game a couple of years ago. You would have really have loved to have seen a 2017 season from him. He's going to be the head scratcher for me. And this is actually another one here, and I'll go to it. When I spoke with Daniel Jeremiah, I had had Damian Ratley from Texas A&M on the show, and Daniel actually brought it up. Here's a guy that came up kind of really late in the process in Damian Ratley. Oddly enough, here's a kid who played high school ball in Texas, didn't go through the camps and everything like everybody else. So he didn't, get the big opportunities, the big scholarship offers. Played 1 year of JUCO ball with Dede Westbrook at Blinn Junior College, caught 20 touchdowns there. Got to A&M, kind of got lost in the shuffle. They started calling his number late in his senior year. He was putting up some solid numbers. I had Damian Ratley on the show. Got to talk with him. Here's a kid with his degree. His head's on straight. He's going to do anything you ask of him. And he pretty much does what Antonio Callaway does. He can run the deep routes. He can run the tunnel screens. Antonio Callaway makes one misstep or rubs somebody the wrong way. They've got a guy in the sixth round they drafted, who does a lot like Callaway, where they drafted him in the fourth, and Antonio Callaway could find himself in a bad spot.
Now, this will take us to close to wrapping up our show. We'll kind of look forward to training camp as well as the 2018 season. With this entire facelift that Cleveland has put together this offseason, a lot happening. What are some of the training camp battles you see happening that will be, big time for the team?
It's going to be the secondary. Look, there's a lot of guys there. They have a lot of guys who are capable of playing. How it's going to pan out is going to be interesting. They have three safeties on the roster. Cornerback position runs probably 6-7 deep. They had a Howard Wilson coming back last year who they never really got a chance to see. He was out the entire year. So here he is, a fourth-round pick that was taken last year. He's into the mix with four guys they signed, with Denzel Ward, with another guy in Simeon Thomas that they drafted late, and a couple other camp body types. The offensive line, how's that going to work out? The fact that Carlos Hyde and Nick Chubb are kind of similar players, Carlos Hyde pretty much, he's only here for 1 year. Will Nick Chubb jump past him that quick? Where does it leave a guy like Hyde? The wide receiver, the wide receiver position itself could be really, really special because you have a solid group. If you get all those question mark guys, if you can get them on the field every week, and then just obviously, the tight end position. You got two young athletic tight ends that can make a lot of plays. Are they going to find a way, to feed everybody? But, part of it is, though, is they're facing some tough competition. So it's going to be interesting how they weather the storm, really, because they're playing the NFC South. They're playing the AFC West. So it's going to be funny in that respect. But, you know, your secondary, how the D-line shapes up, the O-line, the running back pecking order, the wide receiver pecking order, all things to watch. And it's going to be fun to watch because it's not going to be a question of, well, you know, it's going to be a question of who takes it because there's a lot of talent around. So who's going to step up, seize an opportunity?
Now, we said this last year, and I'll bring this up before I get your final record prediction. I think it was Ben Albright, maybe last year, that came out and said that he could see Cleveland as a 7-win team, and that didn't happen. The talent's there this year that we could be saying it again, that they could jump up, they could win a lot more. Now, the question is will they? And let's assume they don't, and that Hugh is gone. What could you see... Like, who could you see as a potential replacement long-term at the head coaching position? Just, you know, right now I've already seen people talking about it, so I thought it would be a worthwhile question. Maybe someone like a Lincoln Riley because you've got Baker Mayfield, or you bring someone in-house like Todd Haley who's been looking for a head coaching position for a while if he might be a guy that Dorsey really likes. Who would be your ideal guy in this situation?
I think you'd look to Philadelphia and DeFilippo. I think you have Baker Mayfield. The Lincoln Riley thing is interesting, but if you're a Lincoln Riley and you can just pound out double-digit wins every year in Oklahoma, make yourself $7, $8, $9 million a year, do you want the pressure, you know, where you may just end back up in college ball in 3-4 years anyway? DeFilippo just seems like the perfect guy. I think he would work well with Baker. You know, you look at what, you know, they did with Nick Foles to get, you know, to obviously losing Carson Wentz and being able to just, you know, mix it up and do different things and fun things where everybody was into it and enjoyed it. You can do that with a Baker Mayfield, the talent you have here. I think he'd be the guy that they'd be first running to. You know, Haley's an interesting guy, but, you know, he's got his concerns, and you'd really hate if he was your head coach and did one of these stupid things that he's done in his past where him and his wife get in an argument at a bar. You just don't want that look from an NFL head coach. I think DeFilippo would be the guy they'd be running to hand the organization to.
Speaking of record, this will close us out. What's your record prediction for the Browns in 2018?
I'll say 5-11 or 6-10. I'll say one of those two. I think they're a better team than the Cincinnati Bengals. I have no idea still what to make of the Baltimore Ravens. The fact that the selection of Lamar Jackson, does that fuel Joe Flacco? Or does it piss Joe Flacco off? Does it take a shot at his confidence where, you know, maybe they have a new quarterback that they're looking forward to playing, you know, in the near future, whether it's 19 or 20. But how does that make up for their 18 team? Obviously, when they're moving on from Ozzie Newsome as well, you know, is John Harbaugh himself, you know, far behind as well? So I'm going to say 5-11, 6-10. I think they're going to surprise some people. If you can get Manny Agba and Myles Garrett on the field together for 13, 14, 15, 16 games, which they were unable to do last year, you got a real formidable duo there. They're going to surprise some people. There's going to be a couple teams they're going to pull some surprises on. There's no doubt about it.
And that's certainly a dramatic improvement. Well, that should go ahead and wrap us up. Be sure to give Jeff a follow on Twitter at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd, as well as the Locked On Browns handle. Jeff, where can everyone else find your work at?
No, that's pretty much where you're finding me right now. There's some things in the work that I'll probably have out as we get closer to the season. But look, you know, as we were saying, right now, I'm just enjoying a little bit of the downtime. Nice to see the kids and the wife again.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was great having you on. I'm sure we'll be able to talk to you again at some point this season.
Of course, Zach. Anytime, man. Guys, best of luck at the show. And, you know, Chris, I understand, you know, go see a good concert and all, but you can't leave your boy in the foxhole alone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, then that'll go ahead and do it for us here at Locked On Jaguars. Be sure to give us a follow as well as Locked On Browns at Locked On Jaguars and at Locked On Browns. Myself at Zach_Goodall and Chris at Misto Christopho. I'm sure he'll have some great videos up from Kendrick Lamar. We'll catch up with you guys next time.